Alors, lui, c'est quand même moi, quand même. We'll just have to begin. So tonight we'll finish chapter 79. And what's the chapter called?
The Balaram goes on pilgrimage.
So that's verses 18 to 34, and then we'll finish the chapter off. Okay. So, next he went to Falgun Tirtha and bathed in the sacred Panchapsara lake, where Lord Vishnu had directly manifested himself. At this place he gave away another 10,000 cows. So in the previous verse it mentions that Lord Balaram gave away 10,000 cows. So he's given away another 10,000 cows. So the basic principle is?
Charity.
Yeah, you have to give charity. Especially when you go to holy places. As we said last time, it mentions in the Nectar of Devotion, you should not enter the temple without a gift. That's why we have the hundi there. That's the system, is that most people, when they go to the temple, they'll give something to the deity. So we don't do that. Just because it's not like a common practice. But at least, you know, when we offer our obeisances, then the feeling is that we're giving our life to the deity. Atma nivedanam. Because what are the four gifts that we can give to the deities?
We've mentioned before.
The first one it said is that one can give one's words. It says one can give one's money. And then one can give one's intelligence. And then one can give one's life. So you can give your words as a glorification to the Lord. But more surrender than giving your words in glorification is giving your money. That's a higher level of surrender. And then higher than giving your money is giving your intelligence, which means you study the Shastra. And then higher than giving your intelligence is giving your life. So that's considered to be the highest surrender. So it goes in that order. So there's different orders, different levels, but that should be the system. So the system is when we go before the deities, then at least we give our life. If we can't give, you know, something physical, then that's the system. When we're offering obeisances, that's our meditation. Krishna, I'm giving you everything that I possess. I'm giving you my life, my energy. So Balaram's practice is that when he goes to the holy places, he gives the charity. So we should also do like that. That's the basic system, or the basic teaching in the system. Any points?
Balaram purchased the 10,000 cows and then gave them. He wouldn't have taken those cows.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been traveling with them. But it means that when he arrived at the place, maybe that was offered to him.
The cows?
Yeah, maybe the other king offered it to Balaram or something like that, and then he offered it to the brahmanas. One of the... because Krishna, in the 18th chapter of the Gita, he discusses the qualities of the different Varnas. He says, you know, Brahmanas have these qualities, and then he says the Vaishyas are known for these activities, and the Shudras, and then he says the Kshatriyas. And one of the qualities of a Kshatriya is resourcefulness. You're not a Kshatriya, you're not a leader unless you're resourceful. Unless you can build resource. And if you can build resource, then you're considered a powerful leader. If you can't build resource, then you're not a leader. So that's one of the qualities of the Kshatriya. So Balaram has arrived. Just by arriving there, he's developed resources. You know, things, people are offering things to him because of his potency, his power. And then because of his potency, then he distributes that. Don't keep it all for yourself. Distribute something in charity. Don't be greedy. If you're greedy, Krishna will take it away forcefully. So better we give it in voluntarily. Any points? Okay. The Supreme Lord then travelled through the kingdoms of Kerala, Trigarta, visiting Lord Shiva's sacred city of Gokana, where Lord Durjati, Shiva, directly manifests himself. After also visiting Goddess Parvati, who dwells on an island, Lord Balaram went to the holy district of Shoparaka and bathed in the Tapi, Payoshni, and near Vindhya rivers. He next entered the Dandaka forest and went to the river Riva, along which the city of Mahishmati is found. Then he bathed at Manu Tirtha and finally returned to Prabhas. So what is being described here? One is to do yatra. Yatra means you have to go on pilgrimage, parikrama, regularly. It's actually mentioned in the Manu Samhita that 1 in 7 days should be a day of rest. And then 1 month out of 12 should be a rest. And 1 year out of 7 should be a rest. So that means for us, resting means we go on pilgrimage. You know, we don't just do nothing, we don't just sleep in. Just like we have volunteers at our farm. People come and they volunteer. So today we said, okay, have a day off because they were helping us on the weekend, everyone was busy. So I went down there this morning, like 10:30, 11, they're just getting up. That's what people do when they have their rest day, they just sleep. That's not our system. Our system is, it means, you know, we do more spiritual activity, you have a day off, just, you know, one day a week we can just fully absorb ourselves in devotional service. And then every 1 year and every 7, we don't follow this in this day and age, but that's actually the system, Manu says. One year out of 7, you go on a pilgrimage. So that means in your life, every 7 years, you'll wander around, go to different pilgrimage places. So it's a very nice system. Not something we follow now. At least we try to follow one month out of the 12, 1 day of the week. At least we can do those things. So he's gone on parikrama. He's gone on yatra. And where has he gone to?
South India.
Yeah. I've never done the South Indian tour, but there are places which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited all through South India. You can do South Indian tours. Even they're talking about going to Sri Lanka. I think Radhanaswami is going to take a group over Sri Lanka. You know, there's places where Ramachandra had pastimes, where Ravana's things were. So, you know, so many places you can go. Mentions in Chaitanya Charitamrita in the purport, we're called Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Why are we called Gaudiya Vaishnavas? I know that. I'm saying, why are we called Gaudiya?
No, we are from Gaudadesh
because we are from West Bengal. Gaudadesh, yeah. Devotees quite often say And I thought for many years, you know, Gaudiya means something to do with Lord Chaitanya, Gaudiya. But it's not that. Gaudiya, or Golda Desh, means North India. There's five states. And Pancha Dravida, Prabhupada explains this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Adi Lila. Pancha Dravida means there's five areas in the south. There's two different types of Vaishnavism. All are Vaishnavas. Gaudiya Vaishnava means North India. Pancha Dravida means South India. There's two different moods. South India, they primarily worship Lakshmi Narayan, primarily. There's other deities as well. And in North India, it's principally Radha Krishna. So it's different moods. Now, there's a different mood, the North Indian mood and worship, and the South Indian mood, they're quite different. But all of Vaishnavas. Four bona fide sampradayas. One from Shiva, one from Lakshmi, one from Brahma, one from Kumaras. So the one from Lord Brahma, that's our sampradaya, that's mainly in North India. And then from Kumaras, that's also in North India, Nimbarka sampradaya. They're in Vrindavan also. Lord Shiva's sampradaya, I'm not so sure. I don't know a lot about where that sampradaya is. Vishnu Swami. And then South India is mainly the Lakshmi Sampradaya, which is going through Ramanujacharya. And then that's Southern India. It's a different mood. So different moods of worship. And when Lord Chaitanya came, then he took two principal qualities from each of the four. So he took two from each. From Ramanuj, from Madhva, from Nimbarka and Vishnu Swami, he took two. Just like if you go to Mayapur, to the Chaitanya Mat, and you go and have darshan of, what are the deities at Chaitanya Mat? Whose deities are there in Chaitanya Mat, in Mayapur?
Is it
Gorgala? No. Chaitanya Mat means...
Nadi.
No, I mean, Chaitanya Mat's down the road, where Bhakti Santasar's where Thakur was. Samadhi, it's Patan Vrindavan. So if you go there, there's the deities who were established by Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur called Gandavika Giridhari. And then when you go to the temple and you circumambulate, do paragram, the four acharyas are there. They're the four deities there. And you can offer obeisances to the four acharyas and pray for their mercy. And Lord Chaitanya amalgamated the four sampradayas. And he brought the two teachings from each sampradaya, and then he brought that into his into the Gaudiya sampradaya, which, you know, he's part of the Gaudiya sampradaya. But then Lord Chaitanya gave a very specific flavor to the sampradaya. So Lord Balaram is going through South India doing a tour. Very nice. South India compared to North India is much more pure. You know, to this day, you see, still much cleaner and more pure. North India is somewhat more polluted, not well managed and maintained. South India is still, many places are very pristine. North India also, there's pure places, but it's becoming less and less. Just bad management, that's all.
The temples in South India,
They built the Dravidian architecture. They have special architecture. Four on the ground, and four side there are four gobram, and they have very stone temples inside the temple. It's very old temple, all the temples, not Vishnu's and Shiva's temple. Yeah, different to the architecture in the north. Yeah, different style.
Even
Ranganath
temple
in
Vrindavan is
really an architecture. Yeah, there's that replica temple. They won't let the Western devotees in there though. So. Okay, any points?
Most of the North Indian culture was lost because of the Mughals entering in the north, and they destroyed a lot of it. And that's why many of the devotees moved towards the south. In those days. So there is a BC, like, much of the North India
you know, the mood's still very distinctly different. You know, Radha Krishna worship is there. The Goswamis, I mean, they excavated Vrindavan and re-established things. But yeah, the Mughals smashed so many things. Even up to, you know, 400 years ago, they're still damaging things. The Lord heard from some brahmanas how all the kings involved in the battle between the Kuruvas and the Pandavas had been killed. From this he concluded that the earth was now relieved of her burden. So there was a big conflict. Prabhupada says in history there were two great battles. What were the two great battles? Mahabharata, Ramayana. Yeah, these are the two great battles in Lanka and in Kurukshetra. So if you look at the history, because sometimes people misconstrue the devotees, they say, oh, you know, Bhagavad Gita spoke on the battlefield and Krishna and Ram, they encourage violence and like that, but it's not true. You know, it means they haven't studied what took place. Ram and Krishna both did everything in their power to stop those battles. But the Mahabharata says that Krishna went and he asked Duryodhana, he said, let's just divide it all up. He said, there's no argument. He said, Yudhishthira doesn't want to argue with you. You take half, he'll take half, no problem. Right? Lord Ram, when he arrived in Lanka, he said to Ravana, he said, just give Sita back and we'll spare your life. We won't destroy the city. We won't destroy your army. Right. So we're not warring people. That's not our nature. We try to avoid conflict. But when there's no other alternative, then we will do like that. Krishna did like that. Lord Ramachandra did like that. Prabhupada was like that. Prabhupada is a very peaceful person. But if, you know, if someone would not back down, then Prabhupada would be very strong. You know, we've told the pastime where he was in Mumbai and he was going to the train station and there was some Sikh men and they're very big, right? And they wanted money from Prabhupada. There was some transaction and they were trying to cheat and they were yelling at Prabhupada. Prabhupada was yelling back at them. And then Prabhupada just got on the rickshaw and then went to the railway station and they chased him. They got on the rickshaw and followed him. They got to the train station and then they were still yelling at him on the platform. And Prabhupada got on the train, they came to the window and they were yelling. And Prabhupada was putting his finger in their face and yelling back at them. Oh, like this. Like that. And then the train left. And then Prabhupada just leaned back and he smiled. You know. Because we don't like conflict, but then if we have to, then we will do it. It's not our way. It's not the way devotees like to be. But, you know, if there's no other alternative, we will be like that. So Prabhupada was like that. Ramachandra was like that. Lord Krishna was like that. Balaram's like that. We don't like conflict, but sometimes there's no alternative. We're not scared to do it. Right? We don't like to do it, but we're not scared also. If they want to escalate it, then okay, we'll try to diffuse the situation as much as we can. But if they cannot, if there's no alternative, then we have to be strong. So that's the system. So you see here, Lord Balaram, because there was this big conflict, he's just left. You know, because it's between two groups of friends. Sometimes in life it's like that. Two of our friends are fighting, or two of the family members are fighting. You can't take sides. Otherwise it just makes everything worse. I know that, like in my family, even things, sometimes I just can't say anything. Even though, you know, I have an opinion, but I can't say it. Because if you say something, you know it's just going to get worse. Or with your wife or your husband. You know, sometimes you know like that. Sometimes you just keep your mouth shut. You know, otherwise, you're going to cause a problem. Even though you can see there is something there you don't agree with, but sometimes it's better to be peaceful. Any point? Okay. Wanting to stop the club fight, then raging between Bhima and Duryodhan on the battlefield, Lord Balaram went to Kurukshetra. So he's gone there to try to change the situation. And the nature of a devotee, it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are 26 qualities of a devotee. And one of the qualities of a devotee is mitra. Now, what does mitra mean? He's a friend. Devotees are friendly people. Prabhupada said we should be perfect gentlemen and ladies. Prabhupada said the public should adore us. Right? People should say, oh, the Hare Krishna is such nice people. They should say like that. Maybe they think we're strange because we dress different, or you know, we look different, or you know, different things we do. Something's different, but they should adore us. What is the best way to make them adore us? Prasadam distribution. It's the most effective way to make them people favorable. Distribute lots of prasadam. And then they will adore us. Oh, they feed all the people. And my grandfather, he passed away, but he used to always say that to me. He goes, oh, you always feed those people. Every time I saw him, he would say, how many people are you feeding down there on the Sunday? And I was like, yeah, 500 people. He said, very good. They're very favorable. As they can see, we're doing something for the people. So, Lord Balaram, he just tried to make everyone friendly, because fighting is the last resort. Now, if there's conflict between the devotees, because sometimes there's conflict, devotees aren't getting along. Actually, in ISKCON, I don't know if all the devotees know, but we have an ombuds department in ISKCON. Do you know that? Okay, well, there is. I've mentioned it before. It's called ISKCON Resolve. So if there are conflict, not like small conflicts, but you know, there's like conflict, serious conflict between devotees, you can approach ISKCON Resolve, anyone in ISKCON approach, and you can ask them to do a mediation. Mediations are very effective. I took the mediation course from ISKCON Resolve many years ago. There's a number of devotees in our community who are trained. And if there's some difficulty, then you can ask devotee someone to mediate, and they come in, and then so it's three people, two parties who are not getting along, and the mediator. So the basic system is you say, okay, one party will speak and then the other party speak, and you're not allowed to respond until they have said what they want to say. That's mainly why people have arguments. Kali Yuga is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Why do people argue in Kali Yuga? Because they don't listen. And we have to train ourselves, actually, to do this. If someone's angry with us or they're saying something, then just listen first, see what they've got to say. Yeah. And then respond in a very level-headed way. And then we can resolve the conflict. So if you can't work it out, ask another devotee who is in that position to come, and then they can act as a mediator, and then they can resolve the conflict. It's very effective. So I've done mediations a few times with devotees, and they weren't getting along, so we just sat down and just said, you know, what's your opinion, and then let people resolve. It's a very easy system. And if you know how to do it, you can even do it without the mediator. You know, you just have to listen. You say, listen, we'll speak. You speak, then I'll speak, and we won't interrupt each other, and we'll listen and try to really understand what the other person is saying and work it out. So Balaram's gone to Kurukshetra, he just wants to mediate. He just wants everyone to be peaceful. Devotees don't like to see conflict. Devotees like to resolve things. Any points? When Yudhishthira, Lord Krishna, Arjuna, and the twin brothers, Nakula and Sahadev, saw Lord Balaram, they offered him respectful obeisances but said nothing, thinking, what has he come here to tell us? Niraj, you want to read it?
Srila Prabhupada writes, the reason they were silent was that Lord Balaram was somewhat passionate towards Duryodhan, who had learned from Balaramji the art of fighting with a club. Thus, when the fighting was going on, King Yudhishthira and others thought that Balaram might have come there to say something in favor of Duryodhan, and therefore they remained silent.
Any points here? So, Lord Balaram has come there, and then Krishna and Yudhishthira, and they know that Balaram is friendly on both sides. So they think that Balaram is going to try to say something that will change things. But the system is that Krishna is there, and even Balaram follows Krishna's desire. So Krishna, he wants that Duryodhana be chastised and defeated. So sometimes it is necessary. Chastisement is necessary. It's a part of spiritual life. It's an important part of spiritual life because it develops character. Chanakya says, the father and the guru must chastise the son and the disciple. And Prabhupada actually said, it is the duty of the guru to chastise the disciple. It's a duty. He has to do it. That's the system. It's very beneficial. The problem is a lot of devotees don't like it. They don't like chastisement. But actually, we need it. It's necessary. We need to be corrected. So when you accept the chastisement, then you make advancement. Prabhupada actually mentions that an advanced disciple, he only needs chastisement. He doesn't need praise. Neophyte disciples, they always need praise. Oh, you know, you're doing so well. Encouragement is good, and we all need it. But when someone's advanced, he's not reliant on that. He can be chastised, and then we can continue. And Prabhupada said he preferred the chastisement of Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur more than the praise. That means that's an advanced devotee. So the guru will chastise the disciple when necessary. Just like one time Prabhupada was in a class and Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur, his Guru Maharaj, was speaking. And one devotee was sitting next to Prabhupada and he said something. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he chastised, because Prabhupada was listening. He chastised Prabhupada and the other devotee. He said, why are you speaking in the presence of the Guru? What you're saying is more important than what the Guru is saying. And Prabhupada appreciated the chastisement. Because this is the nature of the disciple. He likes to be corrected. We want to improve. A symptom of advancing in Krishna consciousness means we want to improve. We want to make advancement. So we like it when devotees give us advice or criticism or correction or like that. We like that because we want to improve as devotees. If you don't get that, how do you improve? How do you become a better devotee? So you need that. That's the system. So Krishna's desire is there is chastisement. Duryodhana needs to be chastised. So Lord Balaram wants to do it one way, but Krishna has his plan. But it is necessary. Duryodhana is not a good person. So if someone has bad quality, they need to be corrected. Any points?
Krishna's two incarnations. Krishna's original incarnation, Balaram's expansion, but they are behaving in a different way. Balaram is even merciful to the most fallen also. Balaram was, Duryodhana was so fallen, so Balaram was merciful. Mm. Krishna is like behaving differently and Balaram is behaving differently.
Mm. Okay. Lord Balaram found Duryodhana and Bhima with clubs in their hands, each furiously striving for victory over the other as they circled about skillfully. The Lord addressed them as follows. Lord Balaram said, King Duryodhana and Bhima, listen, you two warriors are equal in fighting prowess. I know that one of you has greater physical power while the other is better trained in technique. So in the Kshatriya code, in the Vedic system of Dhanurveda means the system of military knowledge. Just like we have Ayurveda. Ayurveda means, what does Ayur mean?
Life.
Yeah, life. Ayurveda is meant to teach you how to live a long life. Right? That's the point of the Ayurveda. Dhanurveda teaches you how to practice the military discipline, how to win battles and all those different things. So there's different elements of the Vedas. The different sections of the Vedas deal with different things: health, medicine, warfare, diplomacy, all these things, all the arts and sciences and that. So in the Dhanurveda, it mentions that one must only fight with equals. Someone's on the, like if you're on a chariot, then you can't attack the foot soldier, or you know, only horse, cavalry, they have to fight with it. You have to fight with equals. That's the system. Because there's chivalry involved in the Vedic culture. Actually, up until maybe about 100 years ago, there was still mainly chivalry in warfare, even in all over the world. But then World War I, and particularly World War II, then they began to drop bombs on cities and things. They didn't do those things before. You know, fighting was done between soldiers. But now they just bomb cities and women and children and innocent people. That wasn't the system previously. So the system is you must always fight with equals. Like that means you're showing your real heroism. Otherwise, you know, how are you heroic? And now we have guns. Like, anyone can win a battle with a gun. But if I have a gun and you just go bang, then it's all done. You don't even have to be a good fighter. So the system was, you had to show your actual... Kshatriyas had a code. There was dharma. Kshatriya dharma means you would only fight with equal people. So they were equally matched. That's why they couldn't defeat each other. It went on. It was going on and on and on. For days, they were fighting. Duryodhana was more skilled. Bhima was stronger. Actually, it mentions that Bhima was beginning to feel pain from Duryodhana. Because Duryodhana was very expert. He was striking him again and again and again. So Bhima was actually, and then Krishna gave some signal to help to assist. Because Krishna always looks after the devotee. So he said how to destroy Duryodhana. So, any points? Since you are so evenly matched in fighting prowess, I do not see how either of you can win or lose this duel. Therefore, please stop this useless battle. So, we have to learn to resist this urge. This is spoken of by Srila Rupa Goswami in the first verse of the Upadeshamrita. Krota vegan. Krota means?
Anger.
You have to learn to control anger. Otherwise, we fight unnecessarily. When anger takes hold, it's very difficult. You say things you would not normally say. you do things you're not normally. I know, you know, when I'm angry and I'm fighting with my wife or something, then you say things you would not normally say, but then later on you regret it, because then the person is offended, and you know, so you have to learn to control anger. So in this particular circumstance with Duryodhana and Bhima, anger is basically stemming from the ego, because we become very egotistical, especially men. You know, when they're fighting, they just want to prove that they are superior, and you lose your logic, and then it's just based on the ego, and then the whole point of the fight is just to prove that you are superior, you know, so-called superior. So then people continue to fight, but devotees, we have to learn to overcome these things. We have to learn not to be controlled by anger, not to identify with our ego, ahankar, right? And to just be normal in our dealings. Not that we try to always exert ourselves as being superior to others. So Balaram was trying to pacify the situation, but it was too late. Even Balaram was there. I mean, Balaram is Supreme Lord. He is a dear friend of both of them. He's a family member, you know, cousin. He's deeply respected. Such a powerful, influential personality. But because they were too far into the investment, then they could not stop themselves. They just wanted to kill each other. So we have to be very careful not to let our consciousness get to that level. You know, we don't want to kill devotees, generally. That's not the system. But, you know, sometimes we just become so determined to, you know, set ourselves as superior to another person. And it becomes very detrimental for our spiritual life. So we have to be very careful. Even Balaram was speaking, they could not hear. Even sometimes the guru might speak, but the person doesn't listen. Any points? Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued. They did not accept Lord Balaram's request, O King, although it was logical, for their mutual enmity was irrevocable. Each of them constantly remembered the insults and injuries he had suffered from the other. Jayato Vishayam Pumsam Sangaste Shupajayate Sangat Sanjayate Karma Kamakrodo Vijayate. Next verse. Right. If you become angry, what happens? Intelligence is bewildered, right? You forget your intelligence, and we all do that. When we're angry, we say ridiculous things. Or if we go too far, we might even do ridiculous things. You know, just because you're angry and you can't stop it. Completely consumes the consciousness. Completely destroys the intelligence. Pollutes the intelligence, controls it. Bhagavatam says, third canto, where is anger found? There's a list, shloka, one shloka or more. It says where anger is. It comes in the mind. It says it comes in the extremities, like the fist. You know, when you get angry, you're, you know, I know when I start getting angry, I just, you clench the fist. It's actually good to do it because it relieves the anger. But you have to control it so it doesn't become. It says anger is in water, and when water gets really turbulent, anger goes in there. Gives a whole list where anger is. I think in the wind, you know, the wind gets really powerful. I think, so. Anger is in different places. So when we are consumed by anger, as Krishna says in the Gita, destroys the intelligence, right? And then everything is, and it says then your spiritual life is destroyed. You become angry once, you can totally do damage, which can take a long time to fix. You have to be very careful. That's what Rupa Goswami says in the very beginning, control it. You have to learn to control anger. Right. All of these things, lust, anger, greed, pride, envy, illusion. You have to learn to control these things as devotees. Otherwise, very difficult to progress in your Christian consciousness. Any points? Concluding that the battle was the arrangement of fate, Lord Balaram went back to Dwaraka. There he was greeted by Ugrasen and his other relatives, who were delighted to see him. Raj, you want to read the purport?
Vishnu Chakravarti explains that the word wisdom, fate, indicates that the battle between Bhima and Duryodhana had been enjoyed by Lord Krishna and set into motion by him.
So what were the points?
The moment that the war was ordained by the Lord's will, because it was not ready to remove all the shatryas who were corrupted.
Yeah, it is. This word here, which is used as fate, destiny, fate, these things. Yeah, I remember my Guru Maharaj said, not long before he left the world, he said, fate or destiny is Krishna. And that's what's saying here, Krishna. For a devotee, it's Krishna. If our life is going in a particular direction, or if there are particular events which take place in our life, that is coming from Krishna. Normally we would say it's our karma. And actually it is our karma. But for a devotee, even though it's your karma, it's Krishna is directly involved in your karma. For a devotee, it's no longer just karma. For a non-devotee, it's karma. For a devotee, it's karma, but it's Krishna is so expert that he uses your karma to purify you and give you the lessons that you need to move forward. So we all know in our lives that sometimes things happen which are beyond our control. Has it ever happened to you? Something happened, it can totally be beyond your control. That's Krishna. Krishna is doing that. And a devotee, when he becomes advanced, he actually welcomes these things. He thinks this is Krishna's mercy. He doesn't become upset or dejected or any of these things. That takes time to get to that level of consciousness. But when we get to that level of consciousness, we just welcome. This is Krishna's arrangement. It has to happen. Because it's making us detached from this world. And we have to become detached from this world. If you don't become detached, then you can't progress in Krishna consciousness. So Krishna always makes arrangements for us to become detached. That's why all the different things happen. Oh, you know, sometimes you don't know what's going to happen next, but some things happen. And we all have phases in our life where big things happen. And our lives change dramatically. Those things are always ordained by Krishna. Prabhupada says, you know, every day, you know, at home you have the Prabhupada calendar, so, you know, every day, like I say, I turn over the calendar. And there's one day of the year where Prabhupada, in the calendar I have, Prabhupada says that whatever situation you are in your life, that is the desire of Krishna. If you're in a particular situation, that is Krishna's desire. He wants you to be in that situation. And if you're thinking, well, I want to get out of this situation, I want to move forward. If that is Krishna's desire that you go out of this, then Krishna will arrange that. And sometimes you try very hard to get out of a situation, but you can't, then that's Krishna's arrangement. He wants you in that situation. But if he wants you to go out, then he will make that arrangement. The main thing for a devotee is that they want to serve Krishna more. As time goes by, we want to do more service for Krishna. So if that is your desire, I want to serve Krishna more, Krishna will arrange that. He'll take away the obstacle so you can do it, so you can serve him. That's the system. So if you have that desire, Krishna will facilitate it. But whatever we're in, Prabhupada says, that is Krishna's will. If you find yourself in a situation, that's because Krishna wants you to be in that situation. And if you want to change the situation because you want to do more service, then Krishna will facilitate that if he wants. It's up to Krishna ultimately. The problem is with the non-devotees, especially now, you know, especially, you know, life coaches are very big now. Have you heard of the famous life coaches? Who's the most famous life coaches? You know any of them? No. Have you heard of Anthony Robbins?
Yeah.
Tony Robbins? You've heard, yeah. Anyone else heard? Yeah. This guy's huge. You know, he was just in London last week, I think it was. 16,000 people paid £5,000 or $5,000 each to come and spend 5 days with him and get coaching. I mean, that's phenomenal. I mean, if you add that up, how much money he made from that? So we're talking about millions of dollars in 5 days. People are, but, and he does believe in God, and he does speak about, you know, higher power and all these things, but a lot of the what they say, these people, is, you know, you just have to believe in yourself and it's up to you. It's not up to you. Because so many people try so many things and it never happens. You know, Bhagavad Gita says there are 5 factors in any circumstance, in any endeavor, and only one of them is you. And the most important of the 5 is the super soul. Because if Krishna wants allow something, it will happen. If Krishna doesn't allow it, you can try as hard as you want, it will never happen. You know, sometimes I try to do something, I'm going direction, and just no momentum takes place. So then we realize, okay, Krishna does not want this, and then so ultimately we rely on Krishna and Tony Robbins.
I went to one training like that for 2 days. I paid $3,000
with Tony?
Not Tony, there is another guy who comes to Australia.
What's his name?
I forgot his name, long time back, I think 5 years back. And he teaches you NLP, actually, neuro-linguistic programming. You know, he says about the mind, actually, how it works. And most of these people, they show about Hitler a lot. How Hitler convinced people, they show those videos and they say how good is Hitler actually. They don't talk about the negative aspect, they talk about his positive aspect, how he moved entire German to one, I mean, to his side, what he thought is good.
NLP. NLP is very good. Very good thing. Yeah, so many of these things are good if they're using Krishna's service.
So at the end of the day, what they talk is all about money, how to make money.
At the end of the day, yeah.
And that's what people love.
Become material, yeah, of course. Materially successful. Okay. Later, Lord Balaram returned to Naimisharanya, where the sages joyfully engaged him, the embodiment of all sacrifice, in performing various kinds of Vedic sacrifice. Lord Balaram was now retired from warfare. Whatever Bandar Prabhu.
Srila Prabhupada writes, when Lord Balarama went to the holy place of pilgrimage at Naimisharanya, the sages, 90 persons, and Brahmanas all received him standing. They understood that the Lord Balarama, although Kshatriya, was now retired from the fighting business. The Brahmanas and the sages, who were always for peace and tranquility, were very pleased at this.
all of them embrace Balarama with great affection and induce him to perform various kinds of sacrifices. And that sacrifice is part of Naini Saranya. Actually, Lord Balarama had no business performing the sacrifices recommended for ordinary human beings. He is the supreme personality of Godhead, and therefore he himself is the enjoyer of all such sacrifices. As such, his exemplary action in performing sacrifices was only to give a lesson to the common man, to show how one should abide by the injunction of the Vedas.
So what are the points?
Which is nice example.
Yeah. Yeah, because the basic concept in Vedic culture, if you look at Varnashrama, there are four ashramas. Three of them are renunciants. Right? When you're a brahmachari, you're renounced. That's why you wear saffron. Right? And then you become Vanaprastha. Right? And that leads to sannyasa. Vanaprastha is about renunciation. Right? The key word for Vanaprastha is... the religious principle is tapas, which means austerity. It's about renunciation. You're still with the wife, but it's about renunciation. It's what Vanaprastha is for. And sannyas is complete renunciation, full renunciation. So three of the ashrams are about detachment, which means the whole Varnashram system, the Vedic culture, is meant to lead us to renunciation. I mean, my Guru Maharaj said in one lecture up in Sydney, Cessnock at the farm, many, many years ago, we were listening and he was saying that the whole point of marriage life, married life, is to lead to renunciation. Right? If you go through 25 years, that's the Varnashram system, you get married about 25, and at the age of 50, you're winding up your grihastha commitments. The whole point of Vanaprastha life is, sorry, Grihastha life is, to develop a spirit of renunciation. If you go through 25 years of Grihastha life and you're still attached, right, that means you haven't followed the system properly. It means, you know, not doesn't mean 100% detached, but means that spirit of renunciation should be coming. As life goes by, as a devotee, we should be becoming more and more renounced and detached. That's the point. And that should be happening. Krishna will do that. If you're sincere, Krishna will make that arrangement and assist you. But that's the point of the bhakti. So, Lord Balaram, what did he do? He just retired from the world, the whole worldly thing. He just walked away. And that should be the mood of the devotee, because the whole world's just going to keep going on. The only reason we interact with this world is to influence it in the way of making it trying to develop Krishna consciousness. Right? That's what we do. That's why we're here in this world, to develop that. Otherwise, there's no point in interacting, because it's just materialistic. It's just the same old things. Prahlad Maharaj is chewing the chew. It's becoming crazier every minute. You know, just like we saw it in Sri Lanka. Was that yesterday or today?
Yesterday.
Then, so just crazy, every day. Christchurch last month, and then now Sri Lanka and all these things. So a devotee just wants to walk away and be detached. That's Lord Balaram's system. If you're just going to fight and absorb yourself in the material energy, I'll just walk away. So a devotee develops that spirit. That's what the example is of Lord Balaram. Any points?
Okay, Krishna saying that you fight against Adharma.
Against?
Krishna says that you fight against Adharma. So Krishna wanted to establish religion, no?
Yeah.
So that's why the Kurukshetra war occurred. But Balaram also says that if you want to renounce, you have to be detached.
Yeah, so ultimately, we need to understand the order of guru, Because the order of guru for one devotee might be become more absorbed. Just like if you go back in the Bhagavatam, Priyavrata was ordered to become the emperor, the king. So if the guru is ordering, you have to do it. Right? And for another disciple, the guru may say, be detached, renounce. So you have to take guidance, and then you know what to do. Otherwise, you won't know what to do. The all-powerful Lord Balaram bestowed upon the sages pure spiritual knowledge, by which they could see the whole universe within him, and also see him pervading everything. So he gave them Vishuddha Vijnana. Vijnana means realization. Right? We're studying now. This is Jnana. Jnana means study. But one of the purposes of studying is to develop Vijnana. Like when we have the 12 aims of Shastric study. What's the 12th aim? Shastra Chakshus means Vijnana, realization. We should develop realization. Lord Balaram is blessing them. They will have realization. Vishuddha began. Vishuddha means spiritual realization. Pure realization. That's why we study the Bhagavatam. Right? It's not just knowledge. It's not just we're memorizing. You know, like when I examine, you know, we have an exam in the next couple of weeks, right? And so many times over the years, like 15 years we've been doing the toilet. Balaram said this, and Krishna did that. And it's just jnana, just knowledge. We're not interested in that, especially after 15 years. You know, you don't study this for knowledge, it's for vijnana, realizations. What's your realization? What do you understand? How has it changed your life? What have you understood from all this? So Balaram has blessed them. You will have realizations, not just knowledge. Knowledge is just part of spiritual life. It's not the goal of the spiritual. After executing with his wife the Avabrita ablutions, the beautifully dressed and ornamented Lord Balaram, encircled by his immediate family and other relatives and friends, looked as splendid as the moon surrounded by its effulgent rays. So why do we stay in family life? To help each other become Krishna conscious. Right? Bhagavatam says, don't become a parent unless you can deliver the children from birth and death. Otherwise, don't become. Right? Don't get married unless you can assist each other in becoming Krishna conscious. That's the point. Countless other such pastimes were performed by mighty Balaram, the unlimited and immeasurable Supreme Lord, whose mystic yogamaya power makes him appear to be a human being. All the activities of the unlimited Lord Balaram are amazing. Anyone who regularly remembers them at dawn and dusk will become very dear to the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Vishnu. So it says in the morning and the evening we should hear and chant about Krishna. This is called the ISKCON sandwich. Prabhupada said, the morning you hear about Krishna, the evening you also hear about Krishna. Right? That's the way to begin the day, to finish the day, and then you will develop Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, if you read Krishna book before you go to bed, you will dream about Krishna. That's the system. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.